athletes, 99% of them have been so supportive. You know, we've got people that have said, look, we've got one particular chap that said, look, actually take my money, keep it. I'll enter next year's events anyway. I don't need it. I want to make sure you're about. And, you know, people like that have been amazing. So one of the things that we've learned to do, and that I've personally learned to do, is focus on the positives and not the negatives. And that's been a big sort of learning curve from my point of view.
That's Ian Hamilton, the race director for Outlaw X. That's coming up in just over a week. We've got some massive news for you on the show this week about Outlaw X. And this is the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com, electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. All right, everyone, I hope you are all well. Welcome to the show. Today, I'm going to do a special edition, really. We're going to be concentrating on race preparation and going through a lot of the things I work with my athletes in preparation for a race coming up. I figured it'd be a good idea to concentrate on something like this at the moment because all of a sudden, after a season of having no races, races are back on again, and it seems like they're back on with a vengeance. And let's be honest, who knows how long they might be on for. So a lot of my athletes are taking the opportunity to race as much as they can and have as much fun as they possibly can. So we're going to go through some of the race planning documentation that I use with my athletes, and hopefully we're going to leave you at the end of this episode absolutely convinced you know completely what's going on in the run-up to your race, both in terms of how to taper down a little bit and in terms of how to prepare and what to actually do on race day to deliver your best performance. I've also got an interview today with the Outlaw X race director, Ian Hamilton. He's going to come on and talk through everything to do with Outlaw X and the different things that they've put in place. So if you're racing Outlaw X, that'll be a must listen for you. Also, though, if you're racing in a different race, I think it'll give you a good idea of the kind of things that race directors have put in place. They're not always going to be exactly the same, but I think it'll give you a real good feel for what a race is going to feel like. Because I know there's a little bit of anxiety around at the moment around people racing and wondering how it's going to be and will it be different and how will it be different. So hopefully that'll give you a bit of an insight and just help to settle those nerves. Okay, so first off, before we go into all of that stuff today and we talk about results and news and things, it's new bike day. I'm very excited. I've taken ownership of a spanking brand new Cervelo P-Series. A lot of long-time listeners will know I'm a massive fan of Cervelos. I'm on my fourth or fifth one, I think, now. I had a couple of P2 race bikes. I've had an R2. And the P-Series is the updated version of what used to be the P2 or the P3. Disc brakes, which is absolutely brilliant. Really looking forward to getting out and riding on those. And really, I've been won over by the idea of disc brakes on a bike after spending a lot of the summer mountain biking. When I switched back to road biking, every time after I switched back, it blew my mind how much I expected the brakes to feel like disc brakes on the mountain bike. And of course they don't, especially if you're out in the wet or on hills or both. You know, rim brakes are just not the same as disc brakes. I've always been very sort of cynical about having disc brakes on a road bike, but completely won over by it. I managed to pick up the Cervelo P-Series for a steal in a sort of end of mid-season sale one of the online retailers was having. It needs some work doing still. My mechanic friend of mine is doing things. It's got hydraulic disc brakes, so he's taking care of all of that. That's the big challenge, isn't it, of changing to a new kind of technology. I've always done my own bike servicing mostly. There are benefits and drawbacks to this, but obviously with it being hydraulic disc brakes, I've just thought, right, I'm going to hand this over to a professional. So all of the checks are going to be done by him. I've got my bars all sorted out. I've got my position all sorted out, but I want the cables trimming down. I want the brakes sorting properly. And I need the ends of the sort of carbon bull bars cutting down as well, which is something I'm not going to do myself. So hopefully in another week or so, we'll have that back and I'll be able to report back. I managed to copy the position almost identically from the last race bike just by taking a few measurements. So that'd be a tip for you if you're swapping race bikes, is to really know things like, you know, your X and Y, your saddle height above the ground, your aero bar pad stack from the ground. So been able to dial that in pretty well. Two shout outs to friends here. My friend Matt Botterill sorted me out with a set of, he's got these fantastic Kismet arm cups that if you're struggling to get into a comfy position on a bike, they are absolutely brilliant. They're not round ones. They're kind of flat where your elbows go, and then they scoop up around the sides and they come up maybe an inch and a half on the outside of your elbows, and they really allow you to press your elbows out wide. They're really fantastic. They're the most comfortable arm pads I've ever been on. So I'm really excited to get on those in anger outside. And also a shout out to Cervelo himself. Like I said, this bike came from an online retailer, and some of the stuff I expected to come with it didn't come. It was basically a bike in a box, and it didn't come with any of the manuals. It didn't come with any of the, like the riser kit for the aero bars. So there was no way for me to make the bike fit me properly. So I emailed Cervelo, and their head of the UK distribution, a guy called Chris Needs, emailed me back. Was super, super helpful. And a few days later, the aero bar riser kit arrived in the post free of charge. And I just think that's such amazing service from a massive bike company. I emailed them really on the off chance, just expecting, you know, no success really, and maybe being told which riser kit I needed to actually buy for these particular Vision aero bars. But the full riser kit came through with all the different lengths of risers, all the different bolts. So for Chris and his team, and it was a big deal as well because their office is closed down. So, you know, to go out of the way to do that, I was really impressed. So if you're considering a new bike, I know everyone's got their own favorites, but certainly the customer experience with Cervelo for me has backed up the fact that I absolutely love the bikes as well. So thanks very much to all of them there. All right, let's go forward. Let's get ourselves into news and results sponsored by Precision Hydration. The guys at Precision Hydration continue to be the market leaders in your electrolyte and hydration needs. Now remember, hydration isn't just about drinking water. It's about drinking fluid that matches the electrolyte concentration that you sweat out. So some people don't sweat out much, and their 500 milligram sachets be perfect for you. Some people sweat loads, either a very heavy sweater in terms of volume or a very salty sweater like I am, or both. If that's the case, you need either their 1,000 milligram or 1,500 milligram sachets. I'm on the 1,500s and they're absolutely brilliant. They don't taste salty at all. You can mix them in with any drink and they're virtually unnoticeable in your drink. They've got a nice sort of mild fruity flavor. But the key for me is if I don't replace those electrolytes with 1,600 milligrams of sodium lost for every liter that I sweat, I'm going to suffer terribly with cramps, and I'm possibly going to suffer even from hypernatremia if it's really hot. And lots of my races in the past were ruined by that. So since using Precision Hydration, I've had none of those problems. Even turboing on the heat inside, I get calf cramps and stuff if I don't use it. So get over and take their online sweat test. And remember, you can use the code OXYGENADDICT15 to get 15% off your first order with them. Absolutely love them. They're a fantastic company. We've even just got a whole boatload of co-branded Precision Hydration and Team OXYGENADDICT dry robes made for our team. PH had a load of these in. We've had our logo printed on. They're absolutely awesome. So getting changed down at the beach can be a pain in the bum. Not anymore for our athletes, because you can just get changed under their hooded dry robe. So they've got them for sale on the site as well. All right then, news and results. First up, we had ITU Triathlon World Cup. So coming hot on the heels of the Hamburg race, we had this race at Karlovy Vary, I believe it's pronounced, in the Czech Republic. And another win on the men's side for Van St. Louis, with Vasco Valletta in second from Portugal and Yellow Jeans from Belgium in third. Van St. Louis looks just untouchable at the moment. He absolutely dominated another race. And again, a very strong race from Vasco in second place. He's really breaking onto the scene in a massive way this year. So he'll be taking a lot of confidence into next season. Over on the ladies' side, it was a win this time for Flora Duffy. The course was perfect for her. Really, really tough, rolling uphill, downhill, windy bike course. So really suits her power to weight and her amazing bike handling. And she ran away from Georgia Taylor Brown on the run. also from Maya Kingmer and from Jess Learmonth. So the results ended in that order. Flora Duffy first, GTB in second, Maya Kingmer from the Netherlands in third, and Jess Learmonth hanging on to fourth. She had another really strong race as well. So it's looking really good. And I think those are the names we're going to be talking about if everything stays equal going into the Olympics next year. I think it's going to be a real battle between those names. A few more to be thrown into the mix that can't race in Europe at the moment. But for me, it's pretty hard to see beyond Duffy, GTB, Jess Learmonth, maybe Katie Zafira's, you know, she's a big day racer on the women's side. I can't see past Vincent Louis at the minute. If he comes into the race next year with that kind of form and this kind of confidence, I think he's used the end of this season to really stamp his authority onto Olympic distance racing. So we will see. So watch this space. All right, a bit of news then. It's been announced, you'll have seen this already possibly in the press, but it's just hot off the press this morning as I'm recording. August the 15th next year, we are going to have 70.3 Ireland in Cork. So the day before Ironman Ireland, it's going to be on the same location. So a whole, you know, fantastic festival of 70.3 racing next year. You check that out over at Ironman Ireland. They've got all their entry details and stuff up there. More news from the PTO. They continue to do a fantastic job offering prize money. They're offering another €15,000 prize money for the pros at the Pushing Limits Olympic distance in Germany. And they're also offering $20,000 at the Bear Lake Brawl middle distance in, which is in Idaho, I believe. I was having a little read about this race. They call it the Caribbean of the Rockies because the water up there, if you see any pictures of this, the water is like the Caribbean blue color. Looks amazing. So, you know, again, the PTO are really backing their pro athletes and pulling more money out of the purse to really promote the racing and give their athletes a chance to win some money there. So top work for them and hats off. One other little bit of news here at the end of this. I noticed, you remember we had Matt Hauser on the show a couple of months back, a young Australian, fantastic racer, medaled at the Commonwealth Games at the mixed relay and just missed out on a medal at the Commonwealth Games itself. He ran 3:45.8 for 1500 meters, which is absolutely staggering running over that distance. So anyone who's going to face off against him over the short mixed relay distance is really going to have the run on game. That is sub 4 minute mile pace. So that is seriously quick running, isn't it? Really, really quick running. Hats off to you, Matt. That's brilliant to see you in great form over there. Right then. Coach's Couch this week. We're going to go over and we're going to talk about race preparation. So we've got a race day planning document. I'm going to stick a link to this in the show notes. It's going to cover everything that you need to know heading into your race in order for you to plan so nothing gets left to chance. So first thing I want you to do is make some goals. And I don't want you to make goals around beating other people or setting times. I want you to set process-related goals. So what will a successful race look like for you? Okay, it's much easier to sit down and go, right, I want to swim 35 minutes than it is to think about a process goal. But process goals are going to give you the ability to have a successful race according to your own criteria, even if things don't go to plan. So if the course is long or the course is short, time becomes irrelevant. If a super stacked field shows up, which is, you know, pretty likely at races at the moment, you can't control where you finish in that field. But you can have goals like, for example, in the swim to stay relaxed and to sight well and to really concentrate on, you know, breathing bilaterally or however you breathe. But staying relaxed is the key thing here in the swim. For the bike, I'd suggest using a target wattage or target heart rate as your success criteria rather than a time. And for the run, a negative split on the run is the key thing that you're looking for from your whole race. So again, forget about a bike split number. Your overall race is going to be determined by whether you can run strongly in the second half of the run. Other goals you might want to consider are around your hydration and nutrition strategy, and basically to enjoy yourself. Key race day metrics. So have targets around things like hydration, electrolytes, nutrition, so you can take care of them. Rough guide here is 600 to 1,000 milliliters per hour. So more for bigger athletes if and or it's hot, and less for smaller athletes. But you'll practice this in training and you'll know how much you need. But set a target, write it down beforehand so you know what you need to stick to. In terms of electrolytes, you're going to use the guided precision hydration and have the right amount of electrolytes for you for the amount of fluid that you drink. And in terms of nutrition, we're looking for between 200 to 250 calories per hour. Usually this means on the bike. Okay, so you're obviously not going to be able to take any in on the swim. Leave a little gap of 10 minutes after you get out of the water to let yourself adjust, and leave a gap of 10 to 15 minutes before the run where you try not to eat or drink anything to let your stomach settle. Then you can start again when you're on the run. So again, closer to 200 for smaller athletes, 250 for the bigger athletes, or those that are proven to be able to absorb that amount of calories. Basically, if you take in more than that, it's just going to sit there in your stomach. You're limited by how much you can absorb, not by how much you can eat. So if you end up eating 1,000 calories extra, it's going to sit there undigested in your gut, and it's going to either one come out by you being sick or by needing to go to a port-a-loo. All right, let's have some talk about bike power and heart rate targets and maximums. Can I give you some examples here for the 70.3 distance? And if you're racing other distances, you can adapt these up or down. If you're not sure, drop me an email to help at OxygenAddicts and I'll give you a bit of guidance. But for the 70.3 distance, what we say is an overall normalized power of between 75 to 85% of FTP is usually the range where you're going to be able to run well still off the bike. So faster athletes at the 85% end, slower athletes at the 75% end. If you're working just off heart rate, we're looking at upper zone 2 heart rate on the lower end through to mid zone 3, upper zone 3 for our faster athletes on the higher end. Okay. Cap your effort at about 90% on the hills, except for if it's a really steep hill where you're sort of looking at a 20 to 40 second effort where, you know, basically you might just have to do whatever you can to get up hills like that. But if it's controllable, if it's long, slow drags, you are going to have to put out a bit more power, but try and cap yourself at 90% of FTP. And again, this is all aimed around you being able to run successfully off the bike. If you've done that right and you've paced it well, a good guide for run pacing off the bike for 70.3 is to aim for M-Pace. So go to oxygenaddict.com/VDOT, and M-Pace is your target marathon pace. So it's going to be a bit faster than most people's actual marathon pace. But if you use a calculator, that'll give you a good guide for a best case scenario for how you can expect to run well off the bike, off a well-paced bike in a 70.3. Okay. It's probably going to be a bit slower than your open half marathon pace, as you'd expect. You're probably looking at about 30 seconds a mile slower than your open half marathon pace. And my guidance here for you is going to be to run the first half as 9.5 minutes run, 30 seconds walk, and then get to the halfway point and then run as hard as you can to the finish. You should be aiming to run hard when everyone else is falling apart, slowing down or walking. As part of this document, we have got a link to our pre-race kit list. Pretty much everything you can imagine is on there, so download that. We've got a section around what data settings you have on your computer and your running watch. I want you to think about your transition setup. Think about how it's going to be laid out. Think about what you're actually going to be able to do in transition around different COVID guidelines. So things like having your helmet on the aero bars, things like having your bike shoes at the front of the bike, or whether you have your bike shoes already clipped onto the bike. But have a plan for how to get through transition, what you're going to wear, what you'll do if it's really bad weather on race day. Okay? Then we've got a section for planning your race day morning. So plan what time you'll get up, plan what time you'll eat, plan what you'll have for breakfast. All of our athletes have got this down dialed already because they've practiced it already. So don't leave this to race day to guess. Think about your bike setup on race morning, pumping your tires up, what hydration and nutrition you're going to need to put on your bike. And then have a plan for how you're going to seed yourself for the swim, how you're going to breathe for the swim, how you're going to stay relaxed on the swim, your routine for T1, your plan for the bike in terms of power and heart rate, your plan for T2, your hydration and nutrition strategy for the bike first, and then your plan for T2. Specifically for Outlaw, you're only going to have one bike aid station to think about. Okay, so that's made things a little bit simpler. So find out what the aid station planning actually is for the race that you're going to be doing. And then for the run, you're going to have a plan for the pace you're going to run at and think of it in terms of caps rather than targets. So you're going to be capping your run pace at a certain speed, not shooting to run at a certain thing. So that way you kind of hold yourself back over the first half. Especially if you're racing half iron distance, there is plenty of time left for you to run hard over the last 10 or 11K, loads of time to make up that time. Okay. And then finally, have a little think about mental tricks or mantras that you can have in your head in order to get you through the times when it's going to be tough. Accept it is going to be tough at times because it is, and have a plan to get yourself through that. Okay. So listen, I hope that's really helped you. There's a link in the show notes to download this document. I'd advise you download it, print it out, and actually write all this stuff down with a pen because that'll embed it in your brain. And if you do that, you've got no worries or concerns for race day, all right? And that's free. Take it away, have it for yourself. This is the kind of stuff we give to our athletes. I'm happy to give to you as well because I believe in helping people out, okay? If you're interested in finding out about some coaching for next year and you like the sound of what it is that we do, you can find out more by setting up a call with me or my coaching team. There's a link in show notes to book a Skype call and we'll happily call you at your convenience and chat through. But we think we've basically got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program for busy age groupers. We've got a whole bunch of official partners with the Performance Chef, so our athletes get meal plans for free as part of our program, and they also get the option to upgrade to personalized plans with the Performance Chef at a much reduced rate. We've got official partnership with Matt Bottrell Bike Fitting, so you get special help with your bike fit and performance there. So there's some free stuff and also discounts on his bike fitting if you go and see him in person. Precision Hydration are our official hydration partners, so you can get a personalized hydration call with them. And also we've partnered with HRV for training. So all of our training plans have got HRV guidance in there. So you take your HRV every morning, your heart rate variability. If you're recovered, great, you crack on with your training plan. But if not, we give you guidance on how and why you should change it. So that plan is dynamic. You'll know exactly what to do on a given day if your heart rate says you're too tired to train, whether you rest, what you swap the session to, how you adapt your plan. So it's just like having a coach there at your side telling you exactly what to do, but based on your own physiological data. So like I said, I think we've got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program out there. One of my athletes said to me the other day, he joined up because it's not a separate swim plan, bike plan and run plan like he was working off, like a trainer road plan for cycling and a printed out thing from Runner's World for running. All of this is integrated and it's the best of the triathlon coaching knowledge that's around at the moment to get you in tip-top shape for your goal race for next year. So if you're anything like us, if you spend all your time thinking about triathlon and you're not coached, you need to have a look at whether you're taking care of all of the stuff, the obsession that you've got. Come and have a chat with us and see what you think anyway. Our prices will be going up to 2021 prices at the end of September this year. So if you join before the end of September, you get in for this year's price of £997 for 12 months of coaching. After the end of September, it's going to go up by £200. So getting yourself in before the end of September is going to be well worth it. And if you want to do a ride with us on Zwift, Tuesdays at 7:15 PM UK time, the Oxygenetic Triathlon Podcast Power Hour. Workouts guaranteed to raise your FTP and give you a faster, more powerful bike leg this coming season. So yeah, check it out. Just go on to Zwift 10 or 15 minutes before and we're listed in the official events section on the right-hand side of the page. Okay, over to this week's interview of the week with Outlaw Race Director Ian Hamilton. Okay, Ian, welcome back to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. How are you doing today back in sunny Great Britain?
Morning, Rob. Yeah, I'm well. It's always nice to be back in the UK. Looking forward to having an event. It's unique. Actually, feel like we're working properly now. Spent a lot of time during the summer talking to people about reasons why you're cancelling the event. So it's nice to have a conversation on the reasons why we're going to be putting an event on.
Well, I'm very excited to talk about that because I think Outlaw X is, it's firmly got its stake in the ground as the marquee event in the UK, certainly this year. That's, you know, a lot of people had their hopes pinned on maybe Outlaw X will still go ahead because it's later on in the year. So it's great to see that it's going to go ahead. So first up, let's talk a little bit about Outlaw X and the venue, Thoresby Hall. And yeah, we've both been there before. We know what it's like and I know how much space and room there is there. But for people who haven't been before, just set the scene a little bit for why it's such a an ideal venue for a socially distanced triathlon, I guess.
Yeah, we are. We're lucky because in reality, there's other venues that we work at where we wouldn't, where this event basically we wouldn't be able to do it because there's not as much space. The nice thing about Thoresby Hall and Thoresby Park is it's huge. There's parking for in excess of 5,000 cars, which is a great start. Transition, I mean, we only use probably about a quarter of the actually vent area for transition, so we've been able to double that quite easily. Lots of space for the expo, which will be outside, so we'll continue having an expo. Obviously no registration, so they'll be just going straight into rack on Saturday morning. So we're fortunate that we've got well over sort of like 5,000 acres of sort of usable space. And then the run itself is all actually inside the private estate. So it's not possible to access that generally. So the swim and the run are all in someone's private garden, so to speak. But Thoresby is just absolutely spot on for events such as this that we've managed to obviously, that's now become COVID compliant. So we're really, really lucky. And it's been a shame that other events haven't happened. You know, the last thing that we want is to be the only sort of major half distance event that's happened this year. But, you know, we're grateful that we are, and you know, the athletes that are coming along are going to hopefully have a great day as well.
Yeah, so Thoresby Hall is a great big sort of stately home mansion type feel to the place, isn't it? And huge kind of rolling parkland that goes down to the lake. And the run, as you've said, goes around the grounds of this place. There's no out and back section on it. It's in big loops. And as you think of what you would need to run an event in times like this, it's pretty much the perfect space, I would suppose.
Yeah, you're right. It is. It's based around the sort of like the huge hotel as it is now, the actual Thoresby Hall itself. So it's a great backdrop, and we've designed the finish purely to have that backdrop. Yeah, you're right. The lake is a little way out of transition, which gives us really good opportunity to socially distance people before the swim. Coming out of the swim into transition, we already spoke about that. It's really sort of, it's quite an undulating area, so it is a bit of a uphill. We might say it's 400 metres. It might be slightly longer that to transition from the swim. But then again, it's sort of like you then disappear through the park out onto the bike course. So yeah, we are really, really lucky. It's three loops on the run. We've had to make some slight modifications to how it was last year, and hopefully we've spaced it slightly better. But to be working in a place such as Thoresby and have a venue that wants to work and wants the event is made a massive difference to help make the whole event compliant.
And obviously with, you know, the total global lack of racing that's gone on this year, there's been massive interest from really top age groupers and top pros for racing virtually anything that's going on. Now, I've heard rumours in the background of some big names being interested in racing. I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you in the point now where you could give us an idea of some of the names who you've got down on your pro start list for this year?
Thanks. Yeah. actually, I probably should have expected it, but there you go. So we are about to confirm, but we're working with the PTO, so Professional Triathletes Organization. We also going to have $15,000 prize money for our pro athletes. And so we had an amazing sort of elite field anyway. The likes of Tim Don, Adam Bowden was already in. Ruth Astill from a female point of view as well. Lucy Hall was already in. However, $15,000 seems to have increased the pro field quite a lot, if I'm honest. We've got, I think, just under 30 pros racing. Headlines now, obviously, Alistair Brown is now names on the list. We've got Sam Proctor, Tom Davis, Will Munday, Elliot Smales. So we've got like quite a
Big guns there, haven't you?
Yeah. Female-wise, it's sort of like it's... There's possibly a name or two that's missing, but Nikki Bartlett, that's ready to be local, she's now racing.
Yeah.
Obviously mentioned Ruth. We've got India Lee, who put a decent share in the Helvellyn. You know, the sort of like the female event as well is sort of like really chunky. So it's we're looking like we've got some really good racing going on.
Did you ever think you'd get double Olympic champion racing one of the outlaw events?
Spoke to Alistair once or twice about it. But ultimately, sort of, I guess, where we've positioned Outlaw, and certainly whilst we're still growing, it's sort of UK-based and that type of thing. As time went on, we would have been looking to attract more pro athletes. And we've done really well in the past. We've had a number of high-profile athletes that have raced. But they've raced it because it's sort of like a good event that's fitted into their calendar. But no, and until probably a couple of weeks ago when we started having the conversation with the PTO, no, we didn't think we'd have a field like we've got now at all. It was strong, but to have Alistair racing Tim Don, and as an example, you know, both two probably not raced for 10 years. So that'll be entertaining.
Yeah, it will be for sure. In terms of the complication of putting on an event because of the, you know, the restrictions around social distancing and things like that, I was putting myself in an athlete's shoes before we did the interview, and I was thinking, what kind of concerns would an athlete have coming to an event in these times, and how can you address those and sort of say to people, yeah, we've thought of that and we're keeping you safe in this way? So I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about, firstly, how do you go about the social distancing thing in an event where you've got upwards of 1,000 people racing? How's that physically going to work in a, you know, traditionally it's been either a mass start or it's been groups of a couple of hundred on the swim, for example. So just talk us through a little bit about how it's going to look on the day, I guess.
I think the fortunate thing about triathlon is it's already an individual sport. With the likes, ultimately Ironman were the first people to start doing individual starts. And that's one of the big things that we've taken on board, is the athletes will be starting at approximately 6 seconds. The way that we call our athletes down, so we would normally get all sort of between 1,000 and 1,500 athletes, they'd all start within an hour or so. The start's very different. We're now getting, it's going to take 2 hours to get everyone started, and they'll be starting individually. They'll be queuing up individually as well. So we'll be calling athletes through in 100s every 10 to 15 minutes, and then they'll be socially distanced immediately. Transition is just double the size within reason. So everyone's going to have much more space in transition, which I think people will like.
Yeah.
They'll be able to have their own bags next to them, whereas obviously normally we've had marquees and then the bags inside the marquees. All of that is now, none of that exists. Everyone will have their own little space in transition.
Okay.
People will be wearing masks in transition. That's something that's compulsory. We're going to be temperature checking when people come into transition to make sure they're below 37.8, and if they're not, then we give them X amount of time to get themselves sorted out. The other thing is, so like from a cycling point of view, people should be socially distanced anyway. It's 12 meters on the bike, which is the drafting rule. So as long as everyone adheres to that, then that's fine. And the venue on this particular time, which is it's the way we've got to do it. But since Boris and his power of six, the venue is now closed. So people will be able to come in with their spectators. So we'll be able to come in with their athletes. So for example, if I was to go and took the wife and kids, then they're part of my bubble, so they can come in. So that's fine. But we're not going to be open to general spectators.
Yeah.
And that's something that's more recently changed since Boris and the government updates recently. There's been a lot of work. However, we're not the first triathlon now. Everyone's now starting to get used to, and I've seen stuff from Blenheim, I'm seeing stuff from Cotswold as well, where Pete, you know, where the queues just look big, but they're not that big.
Yeah.
But I think we're getting into that queuing mentality nowadays.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense, I think. And I think that the big challenge is it's a mental one ahead of it to kind of accept things will be different and feel different to how you might expect them in the past. And when we get there, it's sort of reacting to the new normal, isn't it?
Yeah, the new norm. Not really a big fan of that, but yeah, that's the sort of the reality. And I think we're quite conforming, as a nation, and secondly, I think we're even more conforming from it when we're athletes, because we're used to quite a lot of rules and regulations and that type of thing. And the nice thing is that, you know, we all, from a triathlon point of view, we've all been set the same guidelines. And so if you have done another event this year, then you'll be used to having a specific time to come and rack your bike. You know, you can't all come at 4:45 when it shuts at 5, because we just don't want 1,000 people in transition at the same time. So, you know, there's certain things that I think people are getting used to. As I say, we're just used to queuing permanently. I've never known as many queues in my life. You know, I'm sort of used to wearing a face mask permanently. Now, nobody would ever have considered that you have to wear a face mask to get into transition.
Yeah.
You know, those sorts of things this time last year, you just wouldn't believe would happen. So I think we've got to socially distance. I think that's really important. But I think on the whole, we conform quite a lot. And as triathletes go, we are used to a lot of rules. So so far we've had very little negative feedback on the changes that we've had to make to ensure the event goes ahead. So I'm looking forward to everyone, continuing in that vein.
Yeah, I think that the overriding feeling is just one of optimism that people actually get to race this season. A lot of the athletes I work with, the feeling over the last month has been, please let this race go ahead. I really need this. I really need something to get to the end of the summer. I've been training all this time. I just need to go and do an event and feel as though the training's been for something. But also to go and experience like the celebration of, we've kind of got through the first part of this and we've adapted to it.
Yeah, our sort of motto for this event actually is welcome back. And might need to edit this bit out. one second, Rob.
No problem.
I don't know. Hello. Oh, there you go. All right. We've got a travel drive, and I'm guessing it's just really noisy and you could hear it, and then the doorbell went, so...
That's life, isn't it? That's not a problem. Yeah. I'm sure the listeners will have enjoyed that.
Right. Do you want to remind me of the question, and then I'll come back to it?
Oh, I can't remember. What were we talking about? We were talking about
sort of changes.
I think you just got to the end of saying how athletes were desperate to race. Because they've trained all season and, you know, it's something to look forward to, that they're really, really hopeful is going to go ahead. And, you know, certainly at this point, 10 days out, it certainly feels like, you know, fingers crossed and touch wood and let's not curse it, but it feels like we're hopefully pretty much there, doesn't it?
Touch wood.
Yeah.
One of the things that from our point of view, we've always tried to stay sort of positive about events happening. We've had a decent amount of time to actually get this one planned, and things have changed. We tried to put on an event at the end of August, but the interest wasn't there. Now, what's quite interesting about Outlaw X is that before we went into lockdown, we had well over 1,000 entries anyway. The Outlaw series itself sells really, really, really well. So we went into lockdown and we had over 1,000 entries. And obviously we closed everything. We literally didn't want to be taking any more entries because we felt we didn't know what was going to happen. And then we reopened when we thought, you know, this might, we've got a good opportunity. We felt positive about the event happening. And then interestingly, we could see that it was actually going to fill. So we've got a sort of like capacity around about 1500. And so we decided that, we'd give the people that didn't want to race, because obviously we was also, there's a lot of people that don't want to race for whatever reason. And we actually lost about 25% of our entries because they wanted to move into next year. And so we then ended up with, 300, maybe 400 spaces. And surprisingly, they went and they sold really, really quickly. And I think that shows that, yeah, for whatever reason, and a lot of the last 300 to 400 that sold were actually charity entries. So we've got sort of like over 100 people that are racing for CR UK or AR UK. And you know, I think it's an opportunity for people to raise money as well as help themselves going, you know, what's been a pretty awful year, but also raise a bit of money for charity, which is absolutely brilliant.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it's strange. The appetite for racing is definitely there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's not there from everybody, isn't it? That there are those, a quarter of people who just want to defer it into next year, but there's people who are desperate to move in to fill those spaces that haven't had a chance to race this year. How hard has it been on you as a race organizer, as a company this year, with sort of the financial knock-on of, you guys have, you've got wages to pay, you've got staff to pay, you've taken people's entries for this year, and then, you know, they've ended up moving their entry into next year. And from an athlete point of view, that's brilliant because, you know, they still get to race next year. But I guess from your point of view, you end up having to spread effectively like 2 years worth of income across 1 year. So that's something that maybe athletes don't think about. You know, was there ever a time when you were thinking, you know, this isn't going to be viable over a... I mean, I remember hearing your interview on another show where there was another race organizer, and he was talking about, it was a chap from the Cotswolds was talking about remortgaging his house so that events would carry into next year. And I think that really brings it home, the sort of the perilous nature of whether events go ahead or not, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's now we're through it, it's yeah, much better. Still nervous all the time. I think, you know, where from a company point of view or from the people that work in the business, we're no different to the athletes. We feel nervous about the event happening.
Yeah.
You know, we are, I always consider us to be athletes as well. From a point of view, we have to put all the prep in. You know, our prep's slightly different. It's not in the pool, out on the bike or running. You know, it's about organizing, you know, all of our suppliers. It's about making sure that the TM's right. It's about making sure that we've got water safety and we've got enough crew and volunteers and all that sort of thing. So we're always the same, and sort of like about now, when hopefully we've gone through the big panic of whether the event's going to happen, we all feel fairly good about things. But as a race director, from a personal point of view, I can't explain how bad it's been. It's been absolutely awful. You know, it's sort of like it not only affects the race director, it affects all of the family. From a staff and a business point of view, at one point everyone was furloughed, and everyone that works within our business are actually active athletes. One of our guys has done an absolutely shed load of training and was, you know, probably the fittest he's ever been. And another one of the guys just ended up struggling to leave home. You know, he just didn't cope. And that's the way it's like. I think it affects everyone differently. The business is relatively sound. We've always ran it pretty tight in the nicest possible way. We've been going 30 odd years. In fact, the business has been going 30 years now. And so we're in a reasonable state. Without Outlaw X happening, things would have been different. And we managed to get Cambridge. So we had Cambridge Half Marathon, it was 15,000 runners. And we delivered that a week before, or 2 weeks before we went into lockdown. So we knew that within reason we'd be able to survive. The difficulty that we do have is that we now have to make sure that we budget really well into next year. So because we won't be taking a lot of money next year, we will be okay. But it's, we just got to, you look at things differently. You're happy to be in business and you're happy to have a job, yeah, rather than, you know, the champagne you're drinking at the end of the year type thing. And you know, it's a little bit tongue in cheek, that is, but that's the reality of the situation. And, you know, we've all said that we'd just be grateful to get to where we are now and still have a job. There's still the potential that, I could furlough staff going into October. Hopefully I won't. Yes, it's been tough. Staff wise have been amazing. Athletes, 99% of them have been so supportive. You know, we've got people that have said, look, we've got one particular chap that said, look, actually take my money, keep it. I'll enter next year's events anyway. I don't need it. I want to make sure you're about. And, you know, people like that have been amazing. So one of the things that we've learned to do, and that I've personally learned to do, is focus on the positives and not the negatives. And that's been a big sort of learning curve from my point of view.
Cool. And so we've got the event coming up as we record. It's sort of 10 days away. What tips would you give for people in the last run-up in these last 10 days in terms of, well, I guess the one thing we haven't touched on actually that I meant to ask you about was, not transitions, feed stations. How are they going to be different for the athletes come race day to how they've been in the past?
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, because I've not mentioned them either, and they're massively different though. So talking bike-wise, on Saturday when people are going into transition, we're going to give everybody two 750ml bottles, and that is so they can fill them up and come back on Sunday morning, and they're going to start the event with a litre and a half of whatever they want. And there's going to be one feed station, so it's about 35 miles on the bike, whereas normally would have at least two. And so there's one feed station, and it's going to be self-service. So they come in, they'll dismount their bikes, and they'll go and collect them. So throw the old bottles away and collect new bottles, and then which we will have filled for them. Obviously, the volunteers will be behind tables, and they'll be wearing gloves. So the athletes will just come in. There'll be a sanitization point there, and pick up a new bottle, and off they go.
Right, okay.
Whereas normally they would free flow through, they'll have to get off their bikes, rack their bikes, throw bottles away, pick bottles up, and off they go.
I'm with you. Okay.
And so that's one of the differences. The other thing on the run, we've actually got 9 feed stations on the run, so we're still looking after athletes pretty well there. And one will be, out of the 9, there'll be 6 that are just plastic bottles, so they will pick up the normal small sort of 33-centiliter bottles, sports bottles, and just drink those. So they'll help themselves to those, and they'll throw those away in a recycle point just afterwards. Feed station-wise will be the same as the bike, so they'll run and they will do self-service. So the volunteers will be behind tables, and they will replenish.
Okay.
So we won't be passing stuff out. But, you know, our offer is still pretty good from a feed station point of view. And I think that's important. Some events are doing things slightly differently. But we've managed to put a plan together where we're still able to support with gels, bananas, drinks, et cetera, et cetera.
It sounds like it's actually not going to be that different, is it? When you adjust your head to the idea that if you choose to stop on the bike, you've got to get off. It's not that hugely different. And for most people, if they're leaving with a litre and a half on the bike, a lot of people might not need to stop to get anything on the bike anyway. And then on the run, it just takes a few seconds more to pick something up. So again, it's not what we used to, and it's not how it has been, but it isn't necessarily worse, I guess.
No, and, you know, there's different events already work similar to that anyway. And what I think, just talking preparation-wise, I think it's getting your head around all the things that are changing. The race briefing is now online, so that should be online hopefully by the end of the week. And the race information is already out there. And the race information is probably a little bit more detailed than we would normally do, and it's got COVID-compliant updates. So it's just actually getting in your brain that you will be queuing up, you will be temperature checked, we'll ask you to sanitize, we'll ask you to wear masks. you know, before the swim start, yeah, you'll probably queue for a little bit longer, and the queue will definitely look longer because, you know, it'll be like 100 metres. You'll be getting on the pontoon, and then within 5 or 6 seconds, you'll be asked to dive into the water or get yourself into the water. So that's the sort of preparation. Just make sure you've got your headspace is correct from a compliance point of view. And we know that from an outlaw athlete, 90% of them just want to get round. That's, you know, that's what outlaws were about, really. And so, you know, it's not, obviously, don't go crazy from a training point of view, but make sure that you're mentally prepared for when you turn up.
Yeah. Good. Well, I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait to be down there. And for me, it feels like the last step back into normal. Not that it's ever the same, but it's going to be great to be back at an event and seeing athletes go around. And I'm really looking forward to it, mate. So thank you for making it happen.
No. I'm massively looking forward to it. It's amazing that we've basically gone all the way to the end of the season and not had an event.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like literally 2020 was the year that just hasn't really happened from a sport point of view. So we're really looking forward to actually delivering an event and getting everyone back together.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Watch the top British pros and elites race. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, and you know something? That wouldn't, you know, there are some positives that's come out of this. And the field of athletes that we've got, we wouldn't ever get that. You know, normally there's no amount of money or from a timing point of view, you know, because these athletes are normally traveling the world.
Yeah.
And so they're all going to be, you know, within reason at the home of the outlaw, which is amazing from an outlaw brand point of view. Absolutely brilliant.
It comes back to what you said. It comes back to finding the positives in difficult situations, doesn't it? And while there aren't many of them, that's undoubtedly a big positive from it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a shame that we can't have spectators there. But, you know, it's about finding those positives. And as you say, yeah, without doubt, it's one of them.
Brilliant. All right, Ian Hamilton, Outlaw X Race Director, thanks very much for joining us. Listeners, if you're going to be racing there, be sure to pop by and say hello. And we'll be giving you full race reports afterwards. Thanks for your time, my man.
Cheers, Rob.
Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that. If you are racing Outlaw X, I hope to see you there. I'll be around in a coaching capacity at the venue. So pop over and say hi. I'll have the branded kit on and the branded hat and all of that. You won't be able to miss me. But I'd love to have, you know, meet people who listen to the podcast. So please do come over. Don't be shy and say hi. And if we can help you out before race day, then we absolutely will do. So best of luck if you're racing there. Best of luck also if you're doing any other kind of races coming up this weekend. So to wrap this up, here are some discount codes and deals for you. Precision Hydration, use the code OXYGENADDICT15 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. TeamOXYGENADDICT.com, the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program for busy age groupers. You can book a call from the link in the show notes to chat to me or the coaching team. And remember, there's links in the show notes for all these sponsors so you don't have to remember them. Till next week, have a great, safe training and racing week, everyone. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya!